Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And we are back from our little mini vacation after the midterms last week. We only did the one episode with some post-midterm discussion. But we're back to a bullshit week of news already, and it's only Tuesday.
Yeah, but starting with some good news, Kyrsten Sinema won her race last night.
Yes, yes. It was, I mean, I'm so, so happy. She's going to be the first woman to represent Arizona in the Senate, which is, again, a little mind-boggling that it's 2018 and we're still saying sentences like the first woman to do X. But
yeah.
And Kyrsten Sinema is great. She's going to be a great senator, so... but we're going to be talking about the Thousand Oaks shooting and then the subsequent fires in the area a little bit. And then we're going to talk about Veterans Day. So we're recording this on a Tuesday. Yesterday was Veterans Day. And of course, Trump couldn't manage to pretend to be a human person for 5 minutes. But we
is he even human? I think he's just like a mess of trash, like just a bag of trash.
He's like a sentient pile of soiled bedsheets. Like it's not like he's not actually like a human person, and expecting him to be one is just setting yourself up for disappointment. But as he's shown over the last 2 years, very heartily. But you know, it was also the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, and instead of commemorating that with other world leaders, Trump decided to stay indoors because it was raining. So
it wasn't even raining, though. He was literally like, there was a forecast for rain. And every other like presidential person who used to work for previous presidents on Twitter was like, even if there is a forecast for rain, there is always a backup plan to make sure that he can go to the event, the president can go to the event, right? And he literally went all the way to Paris to stay in his hotel and tweet about Fox News and conspiracy theories about voting.
But we do want to take a minute to remember all of the soldiers and veterans who fight for this country, and especially those who have made the ultimate sacrifice.
Okay, Devin, there was a mass shooting last week. We didn't get to talk about it, but what happened there?
Yeah, it's really scary. It was a shooting at a restaurant bar in Thousand Oaks, which is an affluent suburb of Los Angeles. 12 people died, and it was after a gunman opened fire for,
And he was tweeting or Instagramming during the shooting or right before it. Like, yeah. Literally, he didn't care. It was horrific.
It was horrific. And the other thing that is deeply scary for me is, I know I talked a lot about how I was going to Palm Springs after the midterms to get away for a few days, but I actually at the last minute decided to go to Oxnard, which is a little beach community about an hour north of me, and my family has a little beach house there, so I decided to go up there. And you go through Thousand Oaks, and I actually stopped in Thousand Oaks for lunch on my way to Oxnard on Wednesday. So I was right next to that restaurant, literally right next to that restaurant, about 5 hours before that shooting. And I mean, what that really means is that gun violence is going to affect every single person in this country. And I can't exactly put into words the sort of the sadness that I wasn't shocked that this happened, and I wasn't shocked. I mean, it's like
it's every day. I mean, I saw a tweet about a 14-year-old, and I'm sorry that I don't know this person's name, that was taken by gun violence, and the tweet was from Washington Post, and it said, "Everyday gun violence takes the life of a 14-year-old." I hate that is in our lexicon right now. That word or that phrase, "Everyday gun violence," is a thing.
I mean, and again, it's not something that happens to other people. It's not something that happens to an abstract group in other parts of the country. And I know that people know this, but again, when it hits so close to home, when it hit so close to, you know, where it, when it becomes not abstract and an actuality, it really just it's terrifying. And so this veteran, he was veteran. He opened fire on this bar where it was college night there. 12 people were killed. We're not talking about gun violence. We're not talking about any of this. And part of it is because literally the next day in that same area in Thousand Oaks, a huge uncontained wildfire broke out. And I was actually stuck in Oxnard because all the freeways were closed because that's how close we were to the fires. So obviously, like, the apocalypse is coming. I think what's so distressing to me about it is that it's become so commonplace that we've completely just like shooed the whole story away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we literally forgot about it. And, you know, there was just a shooting a couple nights ago. Basically, there was a shooting over the weekend at a bar in Chicago, right? And basically, Jamel Roberson, a 26-year-old security guard, was at this shooting. He's a security guard for the bar. He wanted to become a police officer. He had a license to carry. He was wearing a uniform for being a security guard. And when people in this bar, Manny's Blue Bar in Chicago, start shooting, he apprehends the shooter. And then when the police show up, they kill him. And so there's another dimension on our everyday gun violence. And actually, there's two dimensions. One dimension is the fact that our police system is so militarized that we don't understand how to de-escalate situations when it comes to police shootings. And then there's a racial component, when it's more likely that a, quote, good guy with a gun has to be white, or he will be punished for being a, quote, good guy with a gun.
Right.
And so there's so many stories just over the past week, and it seems like we're resigned to not do anything about it. And I know that there are, you know, thousands of people out there who are advocating for gun control.
Yeah.
There's Moms Demand. There's so many other groups. But it still seems that the fact that we can forget a shooting where 12 people lost their lives, the fact that we can almost forget a shooting where a person who lawfully had a right to own a gun lost his life, that we can forget police shootings so quickly.
Well, and he fit into this narrative of a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun, that this administration fucking loves. That is nonsense. But in this one very specific instance was actually the case. And he still ended up dead.
Exactly. It's horrific and depressing. And I hate that it's a part of our daily life.
Gun violence, you know, especially when we talk about it on this show, it always comes back to these systemic issues, right? It's not just these are our kind of random isolated events in which people are killed in restaurants and community centers and schools, but it's a systemic problem. And like, I love the way you put that, Varsha. There's so many dimensions to it. And, you know, this militarization of our police force, this forced ignorance on gun violence and gun safety and the public health issue that surrounds it. And then ultimately, when we do get stories like this, you know, this shooter was a veteran. And ultimately, a lot of the stories that I've read have then tried to do that shift where we then talk about mental health. And I'm not saying that mental health is not a component of this. I'm saying that it's one component of the larger systemic problem that we're not fucking dealing with.
I really, really hope that the new Democratic House, even if it's going to fail in the Senate, right, passes some gun control legislation. I really hope they do. I hope, because the first slate of legislation they're proposing is voting rights legislation, and that's great. We definitely need that. We definitely need to fix our political system. But gun violence is an epidemic, and epidemics, like all epidemics, and epidemics have multiple dimensions, right? You have to deal with how fast it's spreading, where it's spreading, what's the source, all that stuff, right? How are you gonna treat it? And so we need to start now. It is a serious problem. And we literally, it's been all over a year since hundreds of people were shot up at a Vegas concert. It's just gone from our memory. It's just in the memory hole. And it's horrific. Those people's lives are never going to be the same. The people who
survived. One of the victims from that survived the Vegas shooting was killed in Thousand Oaks at this bar.
It's more likely for you to kill, to be died, like, it's more likely for you to die of a mass shooting in the United States than it is for you to, like, die of terrorism, whatever the fuck people are saying on the GOP side when it comes to threats. Like, right. Caravans aren't threatening me. Guns are.
Right, right. So it's just, it's a very, you know, and then the response. So like I mentioned, the very next day, fires broke out in this area as well. Huge swaths of Los Angeles have been evacuated. Homes are destroyed. I believe the death toll is at 45. Yeah. It's a devastating.
Yeah, over 6,000 homes have been destroyed, and as of a few days ago, it was 31 deaths, but it's gone up since then. Yeah. It's horrific. And the real problem with this is that it is a direct result of climate change. Like, again, I'm not a scientist. You know, I don't even play one on TV, but it's getting worse because of climate change. It's getting worse because of the way our climate is literally changing, that even though there were normal wildfires 10, 20, 30 years ago, they were not as big as this. They were not as devastating as this. Right. And so if we have one epidemic, which is gun violence, another epidemic is literally climate change. And I mean, there was a report, we didn't talk about it either, but there is a report and it literally says we have like 10 years until we are at the point of no return. We have 10 years.
And then to just sort of like salt that wound, Trump then tweeted, and I'm not going to quote it because I don't care. But he tweeted about the fire, something to the effect of, it's California's fault for not having better fire suppression.
Yeah. Tactics. But almost 60% of California's fucking forests are under federal management, and he decreased the funding for forestry in the federal government. It's his fucking fault. He did it. It was him. It wasn't fucking California. California has been dealing with wildfires for a long fucking time. When it comes to our land, the fucking firefighters and the California state government knows what to fucking do.
Right.
But they also need federal funds to do to the extent of what they need to protect the state. And they need federal funds because a lot of the land is under federal fucking management.
Right. So that's kind of the point that I wanted to make here, is that you know, Trump says this, right? And let's say you don't know anything about what's going on. You know, he can say that, and you can say, oh, well, that makes sense, right? Well, maybe there should be better fire management or controlled burns or however you're dealing with the fire situation. Because you're right, California's been dealing with this for a long time, and we have things in place. But here's the thing, and here's what I wanted to point out about this, is that even in the face of a natural disaster, and even in a face of something that is his fault, it has been twisted to make it look like, first of all, like a liberal conspiracy. Like, I have to hand it to him. He did a really good job making it seem like it's the liberals' fault that Thousand Oaks is on fire.
Everything is the fault of liberals. Like, I seriously wish, Devin, like, this is horrible for me to say, but I really wish we were that competent.
Oh my God, me too. No, I was talking about it in our last episode. I was like, Democrats, is our biggest failure is the fact that we like get a good thing and then don't know how to organize it. Like,
yeah, like, you know what we should do? We should be like, yeah, Donald Trump, it's all a conspiracy. You want the fires to stop? Give us power.
Right. Exactly. Like, right. I mean,
like, what do you want?
Right. But I do want to make this point. 60% of fire management or forest management in California are under federal control, and Trump and his administration and Ryan fucking Zinke, who is the weirdest fucking dude on the planet. Like, we haven't talked about him recently, but like, that dude is fucking weird. And I could have a whole episode on Ryan fucking Zinke. But anyway, but they have decreased the money spent on these sort of things. They are the ones in control of this problem. And Trump, it's so easy for Trump and then for people to see that tweet or this sort of interpretation of what's going on and completely shift blame away from the Trump administration. And,
exactly.
And again, it does link back to this gun control issue in a sense, is in that it's shifting the blame away from where it is. We're not treating gun violence like an epidemic. We're not treating it like something that is a problem that could possibly have a solution. right? Mm-hmm. And then with this, Trump is not treating this like a natural disaster or a crisis or, you know, a time where, you know, taking responsibility for actions would be helpful. He's treating it like a fucking campaign speech. And we just finished the midterms and I'm tired. I don't want any more campaign speeches for like a long time.
I really don't. I really don't. 2 weeks. Ugh. And I just want to say, like, it's not just when it comes to climate change or fires or everything else. He's ruining stuff as basic as fucking voting. Okay. Like, so think back to 2016. It was before the fated date where we all thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. And Donald Trump was like, guys, voter fraud is real. I'm going to question the legitimacy of this election if I lose. I'm going to question the legitimacy of the election if I win, because that's what I did. I was like, I won the popular vote. So he did that in 2016. And he's been continuing to do that since then. He's hired people like Kris Kobach to run a failed voter commission.
Suck it, Kobach. Go the fuck home.
Fuck you, Kobach. He's basically helped Jeff Sessions. By hiring Jeff Sessions, he's made it impossible for the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department to do anything when it comes to voter suppression, right? And now that we have at least three races, and we had four, but Arizona was called last night, three races where there is a need to count all of the fucking votes and possibly a recount or a runoff, he's like, fuck that. All these people are making up ballots. Ballots are coming from the sky. They're falling from the sky. These are fake ballots. He's making shit up. And he's destroying our faith in the fact that we should fucking count the votes. Like, there's two arguments he's making here. One, that these ballots in Florida, in Broward County, or ballots in Georgia aren't real or something. And two, that you should just stop counting the votes, because Republicans already won. That's literally what he said. Marco Rubio fucking jumps on this train and goes, oh, wait, where are these mysterious ballots coming from? Democrats are trying to steal the election by hiring Democratic, like, county people to count the votes. No, we're fucking not. Like, what the fuck? And so local election officials in Florida had to be like, yo, Marco, no one's fucking doing anything illegal. We're just counting the fucking votes. But yeah, I just want to say, like, Stacey Abrams, Nelson and Gillum are fighting to have all the votes counted in their races because there are weird issues going on in Florida. But there's also the fact that Stacey Abrams is trailing by like 10,000 or so votes. It's so fucking close. And the margin is only getting closer and closer as absentee ballots come in. And just yesterday, a judge said, hey, Georgia, you got to count all the votes. Like, Brian Kemp is fucking overseeing the fucking count because he's the Secretary of State. And it's like, they're literally, Republicans are the ones stealing the election, right? And then in Florida, Rick Scott is the fucking governor, and he is overseeing a possible recount in the Senate election. He is overseeing a recount or a count in the governor's election. It's bananas.
I think that the second point, the second part of the argument is the most, again, blatant and authoritarian, which I know are like my two favorite tinfoil hat hair things to say on this show. But I don't know if you know this, but I've spoken to Sarah Kendzior about authoritarianism.
No.
Shut up. No. But I think that that's the most interesting part of this is that a large part of this argument is let's just stop counting, right? Let's just call it. Let's just, you know, it doesn't matter what these votes say because we're just going to stop arbitrarily for no reason except for the fact that, like, the guy that I want installed is in the lead. So what's super interesting about that is that, like you said, it's kind of fucking not with voting rights as an abstract concept, right? We're not talking about, like, voter suppression or creative voter suppression or even non-creative voter suppression. We're talking about, like, not counting votes, like, like going beyond just who can vote, but then going to directly to which votes count. It's very scary. Like, when you put it like that, it's actually very scary because this is not just about rhetoric, right? This is about an actual, like, physical obstacle or physical barrier to democracy. Again, not abstract. This is not about suppression or making sure some people vote and other people don't. This isn't about, you know, the sort of blurriness that maybe you can see there, or gutting the Voting Rights Act. That's not what this is. This is a very concrete example of how authoritarian regimes work.
Yeah, I mean, he literally called the ballots infected.
Yeah.
Literally. He said infected. But also, the real problem is that other politicians are feeling emboldened by his language, his authoritarian language, and continuing to do this. I mean, this is stuff that happened, again, I was only 7 years old. So I don't actually remember, but I've read about it. But this is shit that happened in 2000.
Right.
Right. When the recount's happening in Florida, everyone's like, why are Democrats such sore fucking losers? Just like call it, right? And no, the point of democracy is everyone gets a fucking vote. If you think your vote doesn't matter, fine, but everyone gets a fucking vote,
right?
Okay. And if you already voted, you can't just not count that vote. That's bullshit.
Oh, it's bullshit. That's the other thing. It's bullshit. And the fact that Stacey Abrams is having to sue to count the absentee ballots and the provisional ballots is bullshit. That's a waste of everyone's fucking time. The whole point is that every vote gets counted. But again, this also goes back to this idea of your first point, Varsha, undermining elections in general.
Mm-hmm.
And undermining the democratic process, whether you win or lose, honestly. You know, you won, but I won by more. And there's this weird conspiracy to like make me look bad, which like nobody has fucking time for that. Like people are tired. Okay. No one has time for that.
Yeah. Basically, Marco Rubio's fucking stupid argument is that, oh, because Broward County or the counties that are left to still count are so democratic, this election must be tainted and you have to stop counting the votes because my guy will lose. Fuck you, Marco Rubio. You're playing a dangerous fucking game. Last year, Marco Rubio was all like, oh, Putin's such a bad guy on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Now you're playing fucking Putin's game. Like it's fucking disgusting. And another thing that's really disgusting is all these both sides pundits are like, oh, the discourse is so bad on all sides. No.
Fuck
no.
You.
One side is saying count the fucking votes that are legal, that were supposed to be counted, and the other side is saying, fuck it, I want my guy to win. Let's first of all suppress before the election, and now let's just suppress after the election. They're literally stealing elections. One side is saying, don't steal an election, even if I lose. Other side is saying, no, I'm going to fucking steal the election. So if you're a both sides pundit listening to this podcast, I don't know why you're here, but stop doing it.
I want to take 1 second, and I know this has nothing to do with anything, but I think about it every time it comes up, which in the news has been every 5 minutes. Broward County is also where the Parkland school shooting happened.
Yep.
And Broward County deserves a voice in this election. And again, this isn't even about my Pollyanna optimism of everyone deserves a chance to have their voice heard. No. This is, you deserve to be participating. And we've had to fight so hard leading up to the election to make sure enough people can participate, that doing this is such a slap in the face. It's so disgusting. And for me, I almost don't even hear or see the both sides pundits, because I'm like, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. That's like, just you're making that up. That makes no fucking sense. Because what is the other side to argue here? That we shouldn't count ballots that are sitting in a box that say 2018 midterm ballot? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Fucking horrible. So I'm really excited about our new sponsor. They're called Simple Health, and as the name suggests, they're here to make your healthcare, well, simple, starting with online birth control. And we all know how important this issue is. Birth control is getting a much-needed 21st century upgrade. And with Simple Health, you can get your birth control prescribed online and delivered to your door for free. Whether you're already on birth control, looking to get back on, or want to try it for the first time, Simple Health will take care of you. I mean, I have had an IUD consistently since I was 22. So I have the luxury of not having to worry about monthly birth control. And that is a something that I know a lot of women don't have access to. And, you know, this idea that birth control is somehow different than other medications or different from other things that we need as a matter of health is absolutely fucking ridiculous. So here's how it works. You fill out a form like the one you fill out at the doctor's office with your medical history, conditions, and all of that. It's the exact same thing, but it's online and way more convenient and comfortable. The process is really comprehensive and it feels personal. They actually ask for your preferences around birth control. What a freaking shock. And doctors help build the product and review every patient carefully to figure out if you're a good candidate for birth control and then pick the right method for you. And just to be clear, Simple Health, they're not making their own birth control or anything like that. The doctors with Simple Health only prescribe trusted and vetted brands of birth control, including pills, as well as the patch and ring. And if you're already on birth control and just want that sweet, sweet free delivery option, it's even easier. Just fill in your pharmacy and any insurance information and they take care of the rest. Never wait in a pharmacy line again, which sounds amazing. And best of all, Simple Health really does offer affordable care regardless of insurance. They do accept insurance, and luckily birth control is free with most insurance plans. We know that this might be in danger, but for right now, that's where it is. And for those without insurance, the average cost is about $18 a month, depending on the exact type prescribed. But delivery is free for everyone. The prescription is usually $20, but Simple Health is giving Hellions a free prescription. Just go to simplehealth.com/hellbent or enter the code hellbent at checkout. And I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for routine evaluations by your primary care physician or gynecologist, but it is the most convenient and comfortable way to get your birth control. So check out Simple Health and get a free prescription by going to simplehealth.com/hellbent or just enter code hellbent at checkout. Give it a try and let me know how it goes, because this is an important issue for all menstruators and easy access to birth control is so, so important. That's simplehealth.com/hellbent or enter code hellbent at checkout for a free prescription. All right, Varsha. So let's talk about Veterans Day and talk about what has been going on with Trump. You know, we talked a lot about voting, and I think there's another piece of the voting rights discussion here too, but a lot of bullshit has happened. So can you take us through some of it?
As you probably know, if you're listening to this, Donald Trump went to Paris for the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, and didn't show up to the event where Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron were and Justin Trudeau were. And then he came back on Monday and didn't go to fucking Arlington. And it's like, you it's the easy stuff. This is like the layup shit. This is the easy stuff to do. You just show up at the cemetery and pretend you care. If you don't actually care, pretend. Because we know you don't actually give a fuck. Like, the way we know you don't give a fuck is there's been a lot of stories about how, like, veterans are actually being fucked over. Like, one active person, like, active military personnel are being fucked over is, like, there's a bunch of soldiers at the fucking southern border right now. They don't have to fucking be there. They're going to miss Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas, because the caravan, quote unquote, the evil caravan of kids and mothers are going to show up in Tijuana in California, not in fucking Texas, right? And then there's the story about the fact that, you know, when it comes to Florida, the absentee ballots, a lot of those absentee ballots are military ballots. And Trump is saying, fuck that. Don't count them. Like, literally, he disrespects the military on every goddamn day. And I'm not saying we should fetishize the military. I'm just saying there are some basic things you do in this country to respect the people who served, even if you disagree with those wars, even if you – yeah.
Yeah, there's a difference between fetishization and understanding what it means to serve your country and treating that with a modicum of respect, right? Like, these are people who do put their lives on the line for what we consider to be American ideals. And do I love how much money we spend on the military? No. Do I think we need to do that? No. But does that mean that we should then take that out on the people who serve this country? Absolutely not. And again, like you said, these are the layup things. This is the easy shit that all Trump has to do is show up and, like, put on a, like, neutral sad face. That's all I want. That's all we want. And he can't even do that. And it just, again, it speaks to this like underlying base level disrespect of the office of the presidency and of democracy. And again, not to be like pie in the sky, democracy is amazing, but this is the shit that if we don't believe in democracy, if we don't believe in respecting the people that serve this country, if we don't believe in counting the ballots, what do we believe in? Again, I'm going to quote Hamilton again because I've been listening to it a lot. But, you know, if you don't stand for anything, what do you fall for? I mean, literally.
Literally. It's the real problem with this is like, fine, you know, it was raining in Paris. I don't know. I wasn't in Paris. I'd like to be in Paris, but I wasn't in Paris, right? But he gets back to, you know, Virginia. He gets back to D.C. and it's actually Veterans Day. He doesn't go to Arlington. Like, it's not that fucking hard. Like, it's just, you just go there. It's like a few miles away. Like, he literally says it's due to the rain. And then in a previous speech, I think this was a while ago, he complained about how the rain ruins his hair. I think it was at when he was helping... he was talking to victims or talking in this was after the synagogue shooting. Yeah, it was at the synagogue shooting, like the aftermath of the synagogue shooting. He's in the city and he goes, oh, I hate that my like hair is ruined now, right? Because it was
raining. And they didn't even want him
in Pittsburgh.
And they didn't even fucking want him there. And he showed up there for some complicated ego issue that he's having.
I don't know, man. Like, I've grown up in this country, but I still don't really fully understand how to quote unquote like how this country respects the military. I don't get the history behind it. Like I sort of do, but I know from whatever I've seen of presidents, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, because those are the two I remember, fucking like respect the military. Again, George W. Bush sent thousands to die, but still, well, he put on the show.
You know, I have family members who have served and actively served in the military. Two of my cousins did tours in Iraq. And Afghanistan. And, you know, I think I was born here. I grew up. I was steeped in the sort of militaristic history and like you said, the sort of fetishization of American military might that you learn growing up in the United States. And I still don't necessarily get it, right? I still don't necessarily understand it. Yeah. And I have family members who serve, and I understand the honor and the respect and the call to serve. And I get the call to serve. I get the call to civic duty and public service. And that takes many forms. That could be the military, that could be public office, that could be, you know, organizing. There are lots of ways to answer the call to serve. But there's a little teeny tiny story in NBC that I don't think has really gotten a lot of attention, that I think is really emblematic of a lot of what's going on here. So the headline is, veterans haven't received GI Bill benefits for months due to ongoing IT issues at the VA. So what, and that's a little bit confusing. It's a little bit of weird. So, but basically what that means is that the Veterans Affairs has an outdated IT system, information and technology system. And because of that, thousands and thousands of veterans are not getting their GI Bill benefits, which are things like stipends for living while going to school and college tuition payments. Because of like what the Veterans Affairs is saying is an IT issue, payments covering education and housing have been delayed or never delivered at all. And they are forcing veterans, young veterans, onto the street.
Jesus.
Because they can't pay their fucking bills. Again, it's this administration, so it's unclear exactly how many are affected. But as of November 8th, more than 82,000 veterans were still waiting for their housing payments with only weeks remaining in the school semester. 82,000 are not getting. And that's just what the VA is admitting to. Hundreds of thousands are believed to have been affected by this. This is just the number that they're giving. Are still waiting for housing payments and education payments and things that are promised to them when you join the military, when you answer that call to serve. And then when you turn around and you say, we're going to help you, and we say, we're going to help you. Go ahead. Go to college. Find somewhere to live. We're going to help you. And then some bullshit IT problem is forcing people onto the streets because they can't pay their rent.
It's fucking pathetic. It's just – and I hate that, like, you know, if Trump actually paid attention to the story, he'd be like, oh, this isn't my fault. It's some liberal conspiracy. Right. Or he'd brush it off. Or Sarah Huckabee Sanders would lie about it, right? It's fucking annoying. And I think what I hate about most about this is apparently disrespecting the military is taking a knee while protesting the flag. But disrespecting the military isn't literally putting them on the street. Like, you can't take a knee. But if you, like, literally deprive a veteran of their livelihood, you're fine. Like, what the fuck? And again, I'm not saying this is only Donald Trump's problem. Like, the VA has issues for decades now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? But it's a combination of issues. It's the fact that at this point, we are 2 years into the Trump presidency, right? And so he came into the presidency being like, I am the best president for the military ever. And now we're seeing this story. So he owns this. He owns this aspect of it because it's been 2 fucking years.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Look, when you're the president, the thing about being president is you get all the guts, all the glory, all the blame. So if, you know.
Because people blame Obama for fucking saluting an officer while holding a coffee cup. So I think Trump can fucking hit.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I just think that in addition to just the myriad of ways that Trump himself as a person is disrespecting the military on Veterans Day, who didn't want to get out of his comfy hotel room or the like because it was raining and a little uncomfortable. I mean, that says so much. But what says even more to me is the fact that we are ignoring hundreds of thousands of veterans in this country because of political differences and an IT error. That's unacceptable. I mean, again, I believe in democracy. I believe in the good of the American soul. And that's not it. Right? Like, we are fucking up pretty badly. And we are fucking up on all fronts. And just, you know, hearing Trump staying in because of the rain, and then also that there could be potentially young homeless veterans because they're not getting their housing stipends. It's hard to process. All right, Varsha. So who is our dickwad of the week?
Well, we get a TV show. And speaking of veterans, we get a veteran. So beginning with the TV show, Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live isn't perfect at making sketches.
That's like the kindest thing anyone's ever said about SNL, Jesus.
They have a lot of really shitty sketches that aren't good, that aren't funny, right? But this all began when, like, Pete Davidson, the guy who's no longer engaged to Ariana Grande, because that's how I know him.
Oh, no, me too.
Is like,
when he said Pete Davidson, I was like, oh, the dude who was engaged to Ariana Grande?
Yeah, literally, that's how I know the guy. And so he made a joke before the midterms, like a while ago, about how Dan Crenshaw, this congressional candidate in Texas, lost his eye, right? And the joke wasn't that bad. It really wasn't that bad. Again, like, SNL has done a lot of horrible shit. This wasn't the bad joke, right? This is not why they're the dickwad. So Davidson said, like, you may be surprised to hear he's a congressional candidate from Texas, not a hitman in a porno movie. I'm sorry, I know he lost his eye in a war or whatever, right? Again, the way you watched, like, if you watched it on TV, it didn't sound as bad as I'm saying it right now. And even as I'm saying it right now, it isn't that fucking bad.
It's a throwaway joke, and it's a shitty, condescending joke. But, like, it's SNL. What do you want?
Exactly, right? It's fucking SNL. Like, SNL, like, has made, like, sexist, horrible jokes about women from across the country for decades. Yeah. They've made horrible jokes about men. Like, of course, they've probably made horrible jokes about, like, veterans, too. Like, this probably isn't the first time, right? But Crenshaw and all of Republican Twitter lost their shit. And then so this Saturday, they were like, let's invite Crenshaw on for Veterans Day and do a sketch with him and Pete Davidson. And this is why they're the dickwad, because it was a boring fucking sketch. And it actually, there was a really good tweet about it, and I forget the exact wording, but it like, it feeds into like our authoritarian like impulses and our weird like military fetishization that we had to like apologize to this guy for a throwaway line. Like, right. The free speech Republican heroes are telling us to apologize for a joke that didn't hurt anyone's fucking feelings. It's not as if, like, Pete Davidson went over to Dan Crenshaw's house and took out his eye himself.
Right.
Like, right. It's what you do. This is the same thing as, like, again, I'm not comparing Pete Davidson to Vietnam War protesters, but I sort of am by saying, like, people who have protested the Vietnam War, people who protested the Iraq War were called unpatriotic. They were called horrible. But, like, unfortunately, Pete Davidson has the right to say whatever he wants as long as the FCC doesn't care.
Right?
Like, that's like, so like, I don't like the joke because I think it was just a bad, like, boring joke. So I don't think it was like disrespectful, right? But and throwaway joke, and it was a shitty sketch to do on Saturday. But the real reason Dan Crenshaw is a fucking dickwad is Dan Crenshaw is a fucking Nazi.
He's a fucking Nazi. Wait, I feel like we really, I love how we like buried the lead here.
He's a Nazi. He's been. He was basically like, he won his race. So we have another Nazi in the house. We have multiple Nazis in the house. But yeah, he won his race, right? So he wins his race, and he has been a part of a Facebook group called Tea Party with over 95,000 members. And basically, they push far-right conspiracies such as Pizzagate. They basically claim that the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville last year was orchestrated by the left. And there's a bunch of other like horrible conspiracy theories in this Facebook group. And Dan Crenshaw has posted a lot on it. He is a fucking Nazi sympathizer, right? He's like, he's a fucking Nazi. The fact that we have gone so far as to like, I know this whole episode is about like respecting the military and like dealing with epidemics and all this kind of stuff, right? And how Trump doesn't respect the military. But there's difference between respect and, again, fetishization, as Devin pointed out. And this was like a case of bad research. Hire a better fucking research assistant for your jokes and your sketches, man. Like, Friday night, you should have been like, let's do a Google search of Dan Crenshaw on Facebook and see what pops up. What pops up is some weird-ass shit.
Right. Well, so again, I also think this really speaks to the both sides nature of the political punditry that we want, that people seem to want right now, right? It's taking two completely unrelated and different things and comparing them as the same. Pete Crenshaw saying a war or whatever is just as bad as disrespecting the military in a more significant way, like say not paying housing stipends. You know, obviously I'm making a false equivalency there too, because I'm worked up about that one story. But what they're saying is that what Pete Davidson said was so bad, it warrants a long, drawn out, painful response. Because we have to be so sensitive to the needs of white nationalists who run for office and, you know.
Yeah. Listen, Pete Davidson has a lot to atone for in his relationship with Ariana Grande.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, they have issues. Like, I'm more mad at Pete Davidson for what he did to Ariana Grande than anything he's ever said on SNL, including what he said about Dan Crenshaw. Yeah. Because I kind of liked the hitman in a porno joke. I thought that was funny.
Okay, so I didn't watch it live, but when I watched it the next day because of all this controversy, I was like, that's like, it's half funny.
It's half
but
funny.
But it's also half not funny.
It's a lame fucking
and,
joke.
And so it's like an SNL joke. It's like, it's what SNL has become since Seth Meyers left The Weekend Update. Like, you know what's worse about SNL is Michael Che being super transphobic. I forgot the white guy's name, but both of them are super transphobic. That's worse about SNL than Pete Davidson making some stupid joke that didn't land, right?
It wasn't even a good joke. Like, yeah,
you're right. The false equivalency, like both sides is like Pete Davidson making a stupid joke is not equivalent to Dan Crenshaw being a Nazi. Sorry, it's not. One is worse than the other. Three guesses.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. And so for a show like SNL, who makes bad jokes as a matter of course, for them to be forced to apologize for a lame, weak, pathetic, bad joke to someone in the military because I'm not even sure why. Like, I'm not even sure why they felt they had to say something.
Have him on, yeah.
Like, they don't say, they, like you said, Varsha, they make fun of everyone and they don't respond to the criticism about most of it. So why this guy? What is so important about this? And it, and I think it goes back to this both sides rhetoric, is that we don't, SNL doesn't want to look like the liberal elite media who slams Republicans and veterans, when in reality, they're not the ones slamming Republican, they're not the ones slamming veterans. I will give them, they're slamming Republicans, but they're just so easy. They're just easy targets. But they're not slamming veterans. Yeah. They made fun of a very specific guy for a very specific reason.
And then had a throwaway line about how he lost his eye.
Yeah.
Like, again, it's not disrespect. It's not as if they went like John McCain, like right after John McCain died, and said something horrible, John McCain. Like, again, I don't know how I would feel about that at this point, but like, it wasn't as bad as it could be. So like, this idea that it was some horrific faux pas is just like,
well, and this also actually goes back to a conversation I had with Ashley Nicole Black earlier this year about comedy, because the role of comedy is to speak truth to power and punch up. That's the whole point. That's what comedy, that's the function. And that's why comedy is an inherently feminist endeavor. And what I really liked that Ashley Nicole Black said, who has a podcast now that is fantastic, but what I really liked that she said was this. She said, there's no joke you can't make. It's about degree of difficulty. You want to make a joke about a puppy, it's going to be easy. It's, you know, but if you want to make a joke about a cancer patient, it better be the funniest fucking thing that ever comes out of your mouth. I'm not saying you can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm saying be careful and be prepared to fail on it. And I think that that's just, that's sort of what we're not understanding about this whole Dan Crenshaw thing, is that maybe it was a bad joke.
Like, the joke failed.
Yeah.
The joke itself failed. And that's why it looks like he made this horrible, like egregious slight against a military veteran. Right. If the joke was a good joke, we'd all be like, haha, that's funny.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, Dan Crenshaw is a Nazi. That's even funnier because Dan Crenshaw is a Nazi sympathizer.
And I feel like that really needs to be the, like, the highlight of the story here, is that SNL is the dickwad because they had a Nazi on their show for some complex backroom political bullshit nonsense that should have nothing to do with shitty SNL jokes. They had a Nazi on their show on Weekend Update, which is the most impactful segment of that show. They had a Nazi. Yeah. That's why they're the dickwad. That's it.
And then Dan Crenshaw is a dickwad because he's a Republican who wants to take away your healthcare. Plus, he was on a Nazi Facebook group.
Plus, he's a Nazi. That's why he's a dickwad. I feel like that needs no further explanation. And just for the record, and even though this was kind of a shitty joke, he still does look like a hitman in a porno. All right, Varsha. So last but not least, a few action items. So what is something that Hellions can do after they listen to the show?
So the first thing they should do is, Stacey Abrams is still fighting to be your governor in Georgia. And so you can still donate to her recount campaign. If you just go to if you go to her Twitter account, she has all the links on her Twitter page. But you can donate to the recount effort, because I am hoping beyond hope that there is a recount. And I am like pretty sure there's going to be a recount after they count all the votes, because the margin is slimming and slimming.
Well, like we said, it's bullshit that she has to sue to actually count ballots that have been cast. But this is where we are.
Yeah.
So this is a really important, even if you're not in Georgia, even, you know, this is important in terms of a democracy issue.
Yeah. And another thing you can donate to is the Secretary of State race in Georgia is actually still going on, and you can donate to the Democratic candidate there. John Barrow is running for Secretary of State in Georgia. And so you can donate to his campaign.
Yes. And then also, you know, I know we just had the midterm, and I know that we haven't sworn in the new Congress yet, but keep this on your radar, because the Democrats in the House want to propose voting rights legislation. So definitely get on calling your reps about that. Also, while you're on the phone with them, talk to them about what they're doing for Veterans Affairs. This is really important, and this is something that we collectively of a country have dropped the ball on, and it's unacceptable. So let's make sure that our reps know that that is on our radar.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the only thing Democrats are doing, those two, that thing yeah. about voting rights, but it's one of the most important things, because this, like, the legislation that they're proposing is not just like revamping the Voting Rights Act by creating automatic voting rights, but they also plan to propose a constitutional amendment to end Citizens United. And I know none of this stuff is going to get past the president's desk, and I know it's not going to get past the Senate, but it's still really important for Democrats to show us, to show the country what their values are for the next 2 years. Yeah. While we wait for the presidential candidate of 2020 to rise from the ashes, name not found yet.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, that does it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being with us here in this post-2018 midterms world. I don't even know what we're doing yet, Varsha. I feel like a little baby deer on baby deer legs.
I need some people to tell me what to do.
I know.
I feel
like I know. It's like, oh God, now what? What do we do now? I don't know what to do with my time.
I do know what I want to do. I don't want Richard Ojeda to run for
president.
Oh
my God, get the fuck out. Just go, leave. Just leave. You're dismissed.
What are you doing? You're a congressperson. Yeah. You're not a congressperson. You're a congressional candidate. Yeah. You can't be president.
Yeah, like, literally.
You're not Jim Webb.
Get the fuck out. You are dismissed. And for
Martin O'Malley lost, how can you be president?
For all of you out there who don't understand, those are history nerd jokes from our favorite history nerd. But anyway, Varsha and I will be back here on Thursday. And until then, have a great week and raise some hell. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
We get editing help from Andrew Walsh. And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, DickwadsBegone, at facebook.com/groups/DickwadsBegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere. Thank you.